We're reading from Canto 11, Chapter 21, verses 1 to 15, Explanation of the Vedic Path. Verse 1. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Ya etam apato hitva bhakti gyana kriya makam shirdam kamam shalai kane jishanta sansaran chite. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who give up the methods for achieving me, which consist of devotional service, analytic philosophy, and regulated execution of prescribed duties, and instead, being moved by the material senses, cultivate insignificant sense gratification, certainly undergo the continual cycle of material existence. So what do you remember from the last chapter 20, the verses we discussed today? Yes, Kapit? We should not
renounce bhakti
for the sake of knowledge. Yes, for sure. Yes? Not become depressed. But you should worship Krishna happily. Don't give up.
And regret,
yes. Worship Krishna at the same time, regret his sinful activities. What else to remember? Yes, Sanishuk. Right. Great, that is, great devotees. They ask for material facilities. Yeah. And Chitra Ketu. Yes, sometimes great devotees, they ask for something to facilitate their devotional service. Okay, what else do you remember? Yes? Should continue with your service.
Don't give up.
Don't give up. Yeah. Okay, anything else? Yes, Lee Shuka.
So, another devotees, they are beyond pious and sin.
Piety and sin. Unalloyed devotees are beyond piety and sin.
And the examples are like the gopis.
The gopis, right.
Vitashur.
Nityananda. Of course, he's not a devotee. He's the Supreme Lord. Obviously, he'll be beyond. Yes? Yes. Everything, all the other paths, all other processes. Right. Without bhakti, they're doing harm. Okay. So in the last three chapters, Lord Krishna has explained the paths of karma, jnana, and yoga. What about those who are not candidates for transcendental advancement, who cannot follow these paths or who are not perfected souls? What path should they follow? What must they do to become elevated? So Krishna was saying there's only three paths of advancement, but now we're going to hear something else. Those who give up these methods, here it says, they must undergo the continual cycle of material existence. But still, Krishna is going to give something that they can do in this chapter. Purport. As clearly explained by Lord Krishna in the previous chapters, philosophical analysis and the performance of prescribed duties are ultimately meant for achieving Krishna consciousness or pure love of God. Devotional service based on hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord directly engages a conditioned soul in Lord's loving service and thus is the most efficient means of achieving the Lord. All three processes, however, share a common goal, Krishna consciousness. Now, the Lord describes those who, being completely absorbed in material sense gratification, do not adopt any authorized means to achieve the Lord's mercy. Currently, hundreds of millions of unfortunate human beings fit squarely into this category, and as described here, perpetually suffer the bondage of material existence. So how many people on this earth planet are doing karma yoga at this moment? are following the Karmakanda path? Not many. And how many are following the path of Jnana Yoga or path of Gyan? And how many are following the path of Bhakti? And how many are unalloyed devotees? And how many are not following? That's the majority, 99% or 98% are not following anything. So this is the chapter for them. Okay. So verse 2. Steadiness in one's own position is declared to be actual piety, whereas deviation from one's position is considered impiety. In this way, the two are definitely ascertained. So we heard a different definition of piety and impiety, I think in the last chapter it was. Remember what that definition was? What is real piety and what is real impiety? Yeah. What is pleasing Krishna? That is pious. But here we're having, okay, if you're in your steady in your position, that's piety. So the purport, in the previous verse, Lord Krishna explained, the path of spiritual progress begins with working without fruit of desires, advances to the stage of realized spiritual knowledge, and culminates in direct engagement in devotional service of the Lord. Here the Lord emphasizes, a conditioned soul should not artificially disrupt the natural evolution of his Krishna consciousness by deviating from those duties prescribed by the Lord himself. So, still there is a verse in the Bhagavatam, first canto, one has given up everything and taken full shelter of the Lord is very dear, even if he's involved in some sinful activity. But also another verse is there that he may give up his duties and take to devotional service, but he may fall down from that service because he's not in an immature stage. But still, he doesn't lose anything. He never. There's no loss. I think that's 1:2:17. And one who may perform his prescribed duties perfectly, what is the gain? And so for a devotee, of course, it doesn't matter if he gives up. But still here, now we're not talking about devotees. We're talking about those who are unqualified. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, I asked you what a good quality is and what a bad quality is. And you answered, it's a fault to see good and bad in devotees and good not to see good and bad in them. I have this doubt. If someone has faith in your topics and is qualified for pure bhakti, but by fate falls under the control of karmis or gyanis, follows them and performs karma, distasteful as drinking medicine, or practices jnana, is seeing fault in his bhakti bad and not seeing fault a good quality? So this is the question Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur asks. Moreover, if someone, a karmi or jnani, does not obtain complete faith in bhakti since he does not obtain mercy of devotees, but by seeing the excellence of a devotee gives up his duties according to his qualification with a desire to attain such excellence and begins worshipping the Lord and announces he is a devotee, should one see good qualities or bad qualities in that impostor, cheater of the world? So he's posing different questions. So then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur answers. Please hear about the nature of good and bad qualities. The jnani fixed in his qualification for jnana and the karmi fixed in his qualification for karma are approved as good. So if you're a good karmi, that's good. And if you're a good jnani, that's good. But, however, because both cannot give their results by themselves, karma and jnana must be performed with a mixture of bhakti, otherwise it does not give any result. So that's his answer. He says, okay, if he's a good karmi, that's good. If he's a good jnani, that's good. But if there's no bhakti, he won't get the result. So, and that, then he quotes 1:5:12, even jnana without bhakti is not glorious. On the other hand, being fixed in bhakti is done by the shuddha bhakti is a good quality because bhakti has the power to give its own result. And so he goes back and forth here. So by this is understood, if there's a mixture of karma or jnana, pure bhakti disappears. To be fixed in the opposite, someone else's qualification, is a fault. So let's see what Jiva Goswami says. He says, in this way, there are different qualifications for one, karma yoga, offering the results of one's work to the Lord. Another qualification for number two, spiritual knowledge. And number three, different qualification for spiritual devotional service to the Lord. And all these qualifications are discussed in this verse number two. So now that we're thoroughly confused, let's go on to the next verse. O sinless Uddhava, in order to understand what is proper in life, one must evaluate a given object within its particular category. Thus, in analyzing religious principles, one must consider purity and impurity. Similarly, in one's ordinary dealings, one must distinguish between good and bad. And to ensure one's physical survival, one must recognize that which is auspicious and inauspicious. So now he's saying that, okay, before I said you should not see good and bad, but actually you have to see good and bad in order to survive in this world. You have to see good and bad. For survival, you have to see good and bad in analyzing religious principles, purity and impurity, and in ordinary dealings. So in three cases, you have to consider purity and impurity, piety and impiety. At the end of the purport, he says, any sane person accepts the practical and immediate necessity of material discrimination, yet one must come ultimately to the transcendental stage of Krishna consciousness, where life is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. Lord Krishna, in his elaborate teachings to Sri Uddhava, is gradually clarifying the transcendental position of Krishna consciousness beyond the endless variety of material good and evil. So he said, okay, even though we're transcendental, still we have to discriminate between things. But actually, this is not for the devotees. It's for the people who are not devotees. They have to follow something. So verse 3, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he says, here the Lord is further describing the necessity for considering qualities and faults. Uddhava has presented his doubt, and the Lord will remove it. Every doubt can be removed by good instruction, just as mosquitoes can be removed by smoke. Okay, so he's giving a very practical example of how to remove doubts. So the doubt is, okay, should we discriminate between good and evil? Should piety and impiety? And should we follow this? So now in verse 4, he explains who has to do this, who has to discriminate between good and evil, piety and impiety. I have revealed this way of life for those bearing the burden of mundane religious principles. This is for these people who are still under dharma, materialistic dharma. And in chapter 25, which talks about the most material nature, Burijan will explain to you that chapter, and that will be all about the modes of nature, and also you will hear about dharma in the modes. What are different kinds of religions in the modes of nature? So it will be a very interesting chapter. So we'll go to the purport about four lines down. In the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna states, Sarvadharmam vidyaja mamekam sharanam vraja. One should give up the troublesome burden of mundane piety and directly take to loving service of the Lord, in which everything is simplified. Lord Krishna also states in Bhagavad Gita, Susukam kartum avyayam. The bhakti yoga process, which depends completely upon the mercy of the Lord, is very joyful and easily performed. Sri Lochan Das Thakur sings, Paramakaruna pahudvijana Nitai Gaura Chandra Shabayavachara Sharashiramani Kevala Anandakanda. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Lord Krishna himself, appeared 500 years ago to distribute the sublime method of chanting the holy names of the Lord. In this way, rather than bearing the burden of artificial austerity, one can directly take to the Lord's service, cleansing one's heart and immediately experiencing transcendental bliss. So the purport writer is following Srila Prabhupada's, the way he would write purports, he would always bring it back to pure devotional service. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati comments on this verse 4 also. Materialistic persons who are attached to enjoying the results of their activities must constantly consider purity and impurity, vice and virtue, and good qualities and faults of all their actions. What is an example of consideration of this that we can give for materialistic persons? What must they consider? Of course, this is in the Vedic culture, but even in modern day life, there must be some considerations. In Vedic culture, does anybody have some idea come to your mind? Yes? Okay, and Jagannath Puri, they don't allow Westerners or white-skinned people in the temple? Yeah, that's a consideration, purity and impurity. That is a perverse one. But also there is this that, you know, there are inauspicious times to travel and to do things. So, like, you see these Indians, that they still follow this for marriages. No marriage in Chaturmasya time. No marriage in Paush, which is the month right now. You don't hear all these bans. But during, after, as soon as Kartik finishes, then it's full speed ahead. So many marriages. That's why we're hearing in our retreat almost every night. At least 3 nights we couldn't sleep. They had the marriage ban right outside of our gate at Govardhan. Yes?
Chanting the holy name disrespectfully or mockingly or jokingly, still they can get
Namabhas. Yeah, you can get Namabhas. Okay, that's the opposite of not considering, not making distinctions. Okay, so Shibhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, transcendentalists are not confined to such material conceptions. However, in this regard, one should discuss these two verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is Adi 1.94 and Antya 4.174. Krishna bhaktir badak jato shupa shupa karma seha ek jivir agyan tamoda dharma dvaite patra patrgyan shab mano dharma epalo e mando shab prama. All kinds of activities, auspicious and inauspicious, that are detrimental to discharge of transcendental loving service to Lord Shri Krishna are actions of the darkness of ignorance. In the material world, conceptions of good and bad are all mental speculations. Therefore, saying this is good and this is bad is all a mistake. Well, Srila Prabhupada used to follow some of these things, like for traveling, he wouldn't travel on Ekadashi or Thursday afternoon. And in my experience, I also avoid traveling on Ekadashi because the two times I've traveled on Ekadashi, I've had bad results. One time I was flying and the engine caught on fire and we had to turn back. We were over the ocean, just took off from Bombay, 45 minutes over the ocean, and then we had to turn back. And then the second time, I went for a visa at least maybe 15, 20 times, and the only time I didn't get it was when I traveled on Ekadashi to Bangladesh. I didn't get my visa. So, yeah, so Prabhupada also considered Thursday afternoon and Ekadashi, he wouldn't travel. And there's another example, which you probably aren't aware of. I heard it, somebody told it in, I think, Prabhupada's disappearance day, or maybe Shrutakirti told the story that one time Prabhupada was about to go on a journey. So, you know, when you're beginning a journey, there's some inauspicious symptoms. So he was just at the threshold of the... He was leaving the temple. He was right at the doorway and Brahmananda sneezed. And then Prabhupada said, what to do? and he looked at Brahmananda and then...
Someone said he's sick.
Yeah, that was... who was that? Navi Yogendra Maharaj. Prabhupada, it's okay, he's sick. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada said, oh, then it's all right. Because if you sneeze at the beginning of a journey, then it's very inauspicious, and you shouldn't go. And then Brahmananda is just—he was very sick, and so he just sneezed right when Prabhupada was at the doorway going out, and Prabhupada stopped, and he said, "What to do?"
Sneezing,
well, it must be. You know about that?
In Ramayana.
In Ramayana, it's what?
It's mentioned
in Ramayana.
There's an omen.
There's omens. Okay.
The direction and time. And
yeah. Right. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Yeah. So Prabhupada, he also followed sometimes these considerations. He would do these things. If you're going on a trip, if you, you should not argue, you should not begin with argument with someone right when you're going out. You should not see laundry, you should not see empty buckets or empty things in the doorway. It should be full with water. That's the full water pots are auspicious.
Good to see a corpse coming.
The what?
A corpse general coming is good.
Rooster. Like who?
Corpse.
Yeah, dead body. Yeah, that's inauspicious.
Auspicious?
In Malaysia, it's auspicious. It's good to see a corpse. Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, because that happened to me a few times. I thought, oh boy, now what's going to happen to me? Yeah. Yes, we could go on and on. With Birbal, there's a story too about if you have a dream that you have lost your teeth. All your teeth, you know, you've lost a lot of teeth, then that means, anyway, I can tell the story first. So when he asked an astrologer, the king, Akbar, asked an astrologer that, you know, I had this dream and I've lost all my teeth. And so the astrologer said to him, oh, that means that all your relatives will die before you. And so he was very angry with the astrologer and he sent him away. And then he went to Birbal and said, what should I do? And Birbal said, okay, disguise yourself and you go back and you say this instead. You say this, this, this. So he went back. It's a different astrologer. And Birbal asks, oh, I had this dream. I lost all my teeth. What should I do? And the astrologer said, oh, this is very auspicious. You will be the longest to live in your family. And he rewarded him with gold. So it depends how you say things as well, but that's also a sign. I mean, you know, the interpretation of dreams. So, yeah. If you ever want to be an astrologer, then watch how you say things. Of course, we don't have emperors nowadays, so we don't have to worry. But, yeah, these are just some of the rules, some of the things, you know. Somebody sneezes at the beginning of a journey. Okay, so then verse 5, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, of the five basic elements that constitute the bodies of all conditioned souls, from Lord Brahma himself down to the non-moving creatures. So if anyone was wondering what Lord Brahma's body is made of, he's got the same things, but he might have a greater proportion of some things than we do. These elements all emanate from the one personality of Godhead. Now, verse 6, my dear Uddhava, although all material bodies are composed the same five elements and are thus equal, the Vedic literatures conceive of different names and forms in relation to such bodies so the living entities may achieve their goal of life. And guess what those names are that the Vedic literature conceives of different bodies? Who can tell me? Varnashram. Varnas and ashrams. That's how the Vedas distinguish different bodies. You're in this varna, you're in this ashram, or you are outside of it. You don't belong to the varnashram. That's right in the purport. The words nama, rupani, vishamani refer to the system of varnashram dharma in which members of human society are designated according to four social and four occupational divisions. So then it talks about brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, shudras. At the end of the purport, although all material bodies are composed of the same material elements and are thus qualitatively identical, as described here by the word sameshu, the Vedic social system, varnashram, is created to engage all human beings in Krishna consciousness according to their various degrees of material identification. That's a very interesting statement. So the varnashram is for those who have material identification. They have this different degrees. And they can be engaged according to their propensity or their natural attraction or their body. According to their body, they're engaged in Krishna consciousness. So the absolute good is the Supreme Lord himself, and that which approaches the Supreme Lord becomes similarly good. Because the sun is a source of heat within this world, an object that approaches the sun becomes hotter and hotter until it merges into fire. In the same manner, as we approach the transcendental nature of the personality of Godhead, we automatically become surcharged with absolute goodness. So if you're in that level of absolute goodness, then you don't have to worry about Varnashram. Although this knowledge is the real basis of the Vedic literature, mundane piety is enjoined and sin is prohibited, so one can gradually come to the platform of material goodness, whereupon spiritual knowledge becomes visible. So if you're not in the mode of goodness, then you need to do these things. If you're not. Of course, Prabhupada had a different method to bring us to goodness, and that's by chanting the holy name. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, then everything is we just heard that verse, all activities, Varnashram, everything is included simply by hearing and chanting, by pure devotional service to Krishna, and automatically you will get the results of Varnashram. Verse 7, O saintly Uddhava, in order to restrict materialistic activities, I have established that which is proper and improper among all material things, including time, space, and all physical objects. And that's what we're going to hear about. What is pure, what is impure, what's a good time, what's an auspicious time. So end of the purport. By designating and restricting the exploitation of the material world, so this is the purpose of the Vedic knowledge and Varnashram, the Vedic knowledge gradually brings the conditioned soul to the platform of material goodness. So that's the purpose of all these restrictions and prohibitions and also encouragements. At that stage, one becomes eligible to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead and enter the transcendental stage of life. So when you come to the mode of goodness, that's your eligibility to do devotional service. Should we remember that such mere eligibility does not constitute actual qualification? You become eligible, doesn't mean you're qualified. Without Krishna consciousness, mere mundane piety can never qualify conditioned soul to go back home, back to Godhead. Within this world, we're all infected by false pride, which must be diminished through submission to the Vedic injunctions. One who's completely engaged in loving service of the Lord need not adopt these preliminary methods, for he directly contacts the personality of Godhead through the spontaneous process of surrender. In the previous verse, the Lord explained why Vedic literatures assign different values to the bodies of different living entities. And here the Lord explains the Vedic value system in regard to the material objects that interact with these bodies. So now we're going to hear all about the Vedic value system in regards to objects, time, place, and so many things. Remember what Brihadbhagavatamrita said about what karma kanda does to bhakti? What does karma do to bhakti?
Obscures.
Yeah, it's a hindrance. Yeah. It's a distraction. It's a distraction. And what does jnana do to bhakti? Dries up the taste. Okay. So now I've got a quote here from DGE 5. I think that is by Suhogram Maharaj. Dimensions of good and evil. So he quotes this verse 7. He's talking about Mukhya Dharma. There's Mukhya Dharma and Gona Dharma. So Mukhya Dharma is the primary religion of all living entities, and that is worshipping Krishna, and that's eternal. In all times, places, circumstances, it's the reason for our existence. But now, in this verse 7, Krishna is talking about Gona Dharma. Gona, G-A-U-N-A. That's the program for things defined by desha and kala, or place and time. So our gross and subtle bodies are defined by place, by time, and by all these things. So a wide range of duties fall upon our bodies according to time of day and season and location in space. And the reason is niyamartam hi karmanam, restriction of materialistic activities. And verses 24, 25, which we'll hear tomorrow, he'll give a fuller explanation. So simply by material birth, human beings become attached within their minds to personal sense gratification, long duration of life, bodily strength, sexual potency, friends, family. So this defeats, the minds are absorbed in that which defeats their actual interest, self-interest. So these are people ignorant of their real self-interest, wandering on the path of material existence, heading toward darkness. So why would the Vedas encourage them in sense gratification? And if they, although foolish, submissively listen to the Vedic injunction. So here it is clear, because these materialistic persons, they're ignorant of their actual self-interest, and that is mukhya dharma, or devotional service. So the actual self-interest may not be defeated. Gona dharma enacts Vedic codes of civilized behavior to make sure they don't become animals. So this is for those people who don't follow devotional service, so they don't become animals in their next life, and they don't lose their spiritual progress. So the first thing that Krishna is considering here is place. What is a good place? What is a pure place? Verse 8. Among places, those bereft of the spotted antelope. Did anyone see a spotted antelope?
Footless?
No, spotted. Yeah, it's a deer. Yeah, spotted deer. Near Varanasi, okay. It must be a pious place. Those devoid of devotion to brahmanas. So these are the not good places. Those possessing spotted antelopes but bereft of respectable men. That's also not a good place. Provinces like Kikata and places where cleanliness and purificatory rites are neglected, where meat eaters are prominent, or where the earth is barren are all considered to be contaminated lands. So the desert, the western countries, and Kikata. So at the end of the purport, Shrimadvacharya quotes from Skanda Purana as follows. Religious persons should reside within an 8-mile radius of rivers, oceans, mountains, hermitages, forests, spiritual cities, or places where the Shalagram Shila is found. So that kind of widens it. With oceans, a lot of people live by the ocean, and rivers, and mountains, more people. Forests and hermitages and spiritual cities are not existent so much these days. In Shalagram Shila. All other places should be considered kikata or contaminated. So if you're wondering what kikata means, now you know. If it doesn't have a river, an ocean, a mountain, forest, hermitage, spiritual city, or Shalagram Shila, then it's kikata. But even in such contaminated places, black and spotted antelopes are found. One may reside there as long as sinful persons are not also present. Now, that's very difficult in Kali Yuga, that you will find sinful persons. Even if sinful persons are present, if the civil power rests with respectable authorities, one may remain. So if you have a good government. Similarly, one may dwell wherever the deity of Vishnu is duly installed in worship. So that widens it a lot because of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada has established deities in the major cities all over the world. So you can live even in Chicago or New York or San Francisco, Los Angeles, Paris, and Germany, Munich. You can go to all these places and still be in a spiritual good place. Now in Chaitanya Bhagavat Adi Lila, chapter 2, verse 45, this verse is quoted in the commentary, and it asks a very interesting question. The banks of the Ganga are most sanctified. Now this is during the time of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this question is being asked. 2.45. Why then, Adi Lila, would a Vaishnava take birth at an impious place? The Lord appeared on the bank of the Ganga. So why did his associates appear in distant places? So that's the question asked in Chaitanya Bhagavat. And we hear about all these impious places, but devotees are taking birth in impious places. So then he quotes this verse. And then he's described how pure is the Ganga in this purport. And in the purport it says, since many of Sri Chaitanya's associates appeared outside of Gaudadesh, many questions may arise in the hearts of materialistic people. If Vaishnavas appear in a place that's so contaminated, the visitor requires atonement. a place that hinders one's purification, then people will consider these pure Vaishnavas as materially contaminated and forced to enjoy the fruits of impious activity. So the question arises, why did the pious Vaishnavas take birth in places not visited by the Pandavas or touched by the Ganga instead of appearing on the banks of the Ganga? One may also question why Lord Chaitanya personally appeared on the highest Brahmana family of Navadvip, which is situated on the banks of the supremely pure Ganga, yet he had his associates appear in places far from the Ganga in families other than Brahmanas. In answer to these questions, it may be said, pure Vaishnavas appeared in such places and in such families in order to purify those places and families. So then the author, this will be explained by the author in verses 46 to 52. So verse 47, out of compassion, Lord Krishna ordered his great devotees to appear in places where the Ganga does not flow, where the holy names are not chanted, and where the Pandavas did not visit. So wherever the Pandavas visit, that's a holy place where they visited. So in this purport, the verse is quoted from 7th canto, 10th chapter. The Nrisingadev talking to Prahlad, my dear Prahlad, O most pure, your father has been purified along with 21 forefathers in your family. Because you were born in this family, the entire dynasty has been purified. Whenever and wherever there are peaceful, equipoised devotees who are well behaved and decorated with all good qualities, that place and the dynasties there, even if condemned, are purified. So then another quote he quotes is quoted in Chaitanya Bhagavat 1.1.15. The great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the waters of the Ganga can sanctify only after prolonged use. One requires atonement after visiting those places where Krishna's friends, the Pandavas, did not visit, as such places are not frequented by devotees. The Pandavas are as good as Krishna, therefore the people of countries beyond the jurisdiction of their rule were fallen, devoid of devotional service and absorbed in material sense gratification. In Dwapara Yuga, Lord Krishna sent the Pandavas to various provinces and thus established his Bhaktivatsalya, affection for his devotees. Similarly in Kali Yuga, the magnanimous personality Lord Chaitanya displayed his extraordinary munificence, sending his own associates to places where even Krishna had not sent the Pandavas. And now Lord Chaitanya is so merciful, he sent Prabhupada to the west, or even where Lord Chaitanya's associates didn't go, and what to speak of the Pandavas. And many pure devotees were born in the west who can purify those who come in contact with them. So this is the amazing, amazing thing that has happened, and we are living to see it, see this happening. So in Uddhava Gita, by Satyaraj, he answers the question, why spotted antelope is auspicious? I thought we should know this answer to this question. Brahmacharis used to use the hide of the spotted antelope as a dress or sitting mat. That's why. So therefore, it was a good place for brahmacharis and ashrams to be, and devotees to be, because that's what they used for their clothes.
The skin,
yeah. He had to die naturally, of course. Okay. So now we heard about place, and now we're going to hear about time. In verse 9, a specific time is considered pure when it is appropriate, either by its own nature or through achievement of suitable paraphernalia, for the performance of one's prescribed duty. That time which impedes the performance of one's duty is considered impure. So time is... the consideration of time is according to if we can do our duty or not. That is how you consider time, auspicious or not. Go to the middle of the purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, the most auspicious of all times is the moment one achieves the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here we hear about the most auspicious time. Do you all remember that moment when you got the mercy of the devotees, the mercy of Krishna? That is the most auspicious time, when you came in contact with Krishna consciousness. Yes, if one neglects the loving service of the Lord, being carried away by sense gratification, he is certainly living and most inauspicious times. I think there's a song also by Bhaktivinoda or Narottam that if you, now the Sankirtan movement is here, and if you miss it, then certainly you will go to Yamaraj, and you are very unfortunate. Therefore, that moment in which one achieves the association of the Supreme Lord or Lord's pure devotee is the most auspicious time, whereas the moment of losing such association is most inauspicious. In other words, perfection of life is simply Krishna consciousness, by which one transcends the qualities of time and space caused by the three modes of material nature. So although the verse is talking about time in terms of duty, Prabhupada is talking about transcendental time. That what is the real auspicious? It's talking about real auspiciousness. So there's a verse in First Canto. Tulayamalavena pina svargam napunar bhavam bhagavat sangi sangasya madhyanam kemudashisha. The value of a moment's association with devotee of the Lord cannot even be compared to the attainment of heavenly planets, liberation from matter, what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which are for those who are meant for death. So what is a pure place in time according to us? What is the best time? What is the purest place? What's the best place to be? Vrindavan. Haribo. We got it. We got the place. Okay, how about time? Srimad-Bhagavatam Katha. We got the time. Haribo. 2 out of 2. Let's try the next one. Okay. Transcendental time and transcendental place. Let's see, Sadhiraj again makes a very interesting comment on this, on the difference between considerations of place and time. So he said places are considered pure and impure according to how they affect one's spiritual practices, and time is according to how it affects one's duty to God. So one is your practice, is the place is important, and the time is important to that will affect your service. In terms of transcendental religion, bhakti, time makes no difference. One can chant the holy name anytime or anywhere. Okay. So now place, time, and now object. Verse 10. An object's purity or impurity is established by application of another object, by words, by rituals, by the effects of time, or according to relative magnitude. Right. So we'll read the purport so we can understand the verse. And he will explain all these different things in the purport. Cloth is purified by application of clean water, contaminated by application of urine. The words of a saintly Brahmin are pure, but the sound vibration of a materialistic person is contaminated by lust and envy. A saintly devotee explains actual purity to others, whereas a non-devotee makes false propaganda that leads innocent people to commit polluted, sinful activities. Pure rituals are those meant for satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, while materialistic ceremonies are those that lead their followers into materialistic and demoniac activities. The word sangskarin also indicates the purity or impurity of a particular object is ascertained according to the regulations of ritualistic performance. For example, a flower to be offered to the deity must be purified with water. Flowers or food cannot be offered to the deity, however, if they have been contaminated by being smelled or tasted before the offering. So these are our considerations of purity and impurity. The word kalina indicates certain substances are purified by time and others contaminated by time. Rain water, for example, is considered pure after 10 days' time and after 3 days in cases of emergency. But I wouldn't drink it anyway because I saw in Australia, in New Govardhan, they have barrels of rainwater. But the problem is that they keep it so long that worms develop. And you have to, they said, yo, there you can drink that, but watch out for the worms in the water. So, right. It doesn't make you feel like drinking it, to tell you the truth. So I felt like catching my own, but there, yeah, it was raining. But Vrindavan, pure water. You get pure water in Vrindavan, but I don't know about Australia. Well, they collect it from the roof of the building. That's how the barrels are like at the end of the roof, at four corners of the house, you have barrels. And anyway.
Sometimes
yeah, rainwater.
They eat the mosquito larva. It's good to have worms.
Yeah. Well, I think it was the mosquito larva that was in the water. That was the problem. Yeah, okay, rainwater. On the other hand, certain foods decay in time and thus become impure. Mahatva indicates that great bodies of water do not become contaminated. And alpataya means a small amount of water can easily become polluted or stagnant. In the same way, a great soul is not polluted by occasional contact with materialistic persons, whereas one whose devotion to God is very small is easily carried away and put into doubt by bad association. In terms of combination with other substances and in terms of speech, ritual, time, and magnitude, the purity and impurity of all objects can be ascertained. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur remarks that impure or decayed food is certainly forbidden for normal persons, but is permissible for those who have no other means of subsistence. So that's a time consideration there. Now, Sri Bhakti Saraswati comments on these impure objects in verse 11. He says, it can be thus concluded that these same conditions are perceived differently by swan-like personalities and those who are no better than dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. So swan-like personalities will see it one way and materialistic people will see it the other way. I should read the whole thing. One must learn the process of serving God from the bona fide spiritual master, thus always maintain one's existence pure and free from anxiety. In general, however, when considering the relative purity and impurity of material things, all the above-mentioned factors must be calculated. So he says, yes, but if you're a Paramahansa, then you won't bother. It won't matter. Oh, that was verse 11. Oh. And we didn't even read verse. We're in verse 10. Okay, let's go to verse 11. It's also about impure objects. Impure things may or may not impose sinful reactions upon a person, depending on that person's strength or weakness, intelligence, wealth, location, and physical condition. So these are considerations of associating with impure things for a person. So to think whether or not you can associate with it. Purport. The Lord has described purity and impurity of different places, times, and material objects. According to the laws of nature, that which is impure contaminates a particular person in accordance with that person's situation, as described here. So depending on the person, you have to apply. It's not like it applies to everyone, but according to the person, the times. For example, on certain occasions, such as a solar eclipse or just after childbirth, one must restrict the intake of food according to ritualistic injunctions. One who is physically weak, however, may eat without being considered impious. So, like during an eclipse, and in Vrindavan, everybody observes fasting. But if you're sickly or you're weak, then you can still eat without considering that it's during an eclipse. And that we do. Ordinary persons consider the 10 days following childbirth to be most auspicious, whereas one who is learned knows this period is actually impure. Ignorance of the law does not save one from being punished, but one who consciously commits sinful activities is considered most fallen. Concerning opulence, samriddhi, worn out dirty clothing or a messy residence are considered impure for a rich man, but acceptable for one who is poor. Interesting. So a poor person can have a messy house. But oftentimes, you go in the village, you see that they're very clean. They don't have a messy house, even though they're poor. They may be poor. The word desha indicates that in a safe and peaceful place, one is obligated to strictly perform religious rituals, whereas in a dangerous or chaotic situation, one may be excused for occasional negligence of secondary principles. So what's an example of that? We can think. Huh? When you're traveling, then you cannot, like if you're on the plane, you can't go and have a bath when you wake up in the morning, for sure. Yes?
When there's war.
When there's war, yeah.
And
Yeah, you may skip your morning bath when the bullets are flying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the devotees sometimes, they are in war and they do food for life. There have been examples doing food for life. And what to speak, there's no water, there's no electricity, and what can they do? You risk your life to get water, and it's not worth it to risk your life for water. So, yeah, traveling, wartime. I think, of course, chanting Hare Krishna, there's no consideration, but Bhakti Tirthamraj used to chant his japa in the bathroom of the trains in the Eastern European countries. Otherwise, it was too dangerous for him to chant in the open. So he had to chant in the bathroom. That's not the place where you're supposed to chant your japa. But and he had, it's dangerous for him to chant outside. Yes, he had? For a sick person to take bath is sinful. Sixth canto commentary.
Punishable by hell.
Wow. Yeah, I know. When I had fever, then I realized if I were to take bath, I was going to increase the fever tremendously. So, like once I didn't take bath when I had a fever, my morning bath. Or I would wait until, you know, it was warmer. Yes. Okay, so purport. One who is physically healthy must offer obeisances to the deities, attend religious functions, and execute his prescribed duties, but a young child or sickly person may be excused from such activities as indicated by the word avastha. Ultimately, as Sri Rupa Goswami says, Anyabhilashita shunyam gyanakarma dhyanavitam anukulyena krishnan shiranam bhaktiruttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably, without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. One should accept everything favorable for devotional service to Lord Krishna, reject whatever is unfavorable. One must learn the process of serving God from the bona fide spiritual master and always maintain one's existence pure and free from anxieties, like with Bhakti-Srila Bhakti-Siddhanta Saraswati. In general, however, when considering the relative purity and impurity of material things, all the above-mentioned factors must be calculated. So that is Sri Bhakti Siddhanta's commentary on impure objects. Now in verse 12, again, objects. Various objects, such as grains, wooden utensils, things made of bone, thread, liquids, objects derived from fire, skins, and earthy objects, are all purified by time, by the wind, by fire, by earth, and by water, either separately or in combination. Purport. The word kala, or time, is mentioned here since all purificatory processes take place within time. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur talks about this. Verse 12. The Lord herein explains in detail how various articles become pure by contact with certain elements. Then he gives examples. The word asti refers to elephant's tusks. The word rasa in this verse refers to oil or ghee. The word taijasa refers to gold and other metals. All these are considered to be pure according to Shastra when they are combined with water, fire, and other elements and used at a particular time. For example, a clay pitcher and bricks are considered pure, but when they are in their original form as earth, they are considered impure. So you have earth and you have bricks, or you have a clay pot. So in their original earthy form, they're impure. If you have a clay pot, it's pure. You can cook in it. Metals such as gold can be purified by clay, water, and fire. Raw silk is purified simply by contact with the air. So if anybody had air, just air. Raw silk.
Also wool.
I've heard that wool is purified by the air as well, yeah. Wool and raw silk. But still, if it starts smelling, you have to wash it. You have to wash if it starts, you know. And some people may just say, oh, I'm purifying my wool and keeping it on the line in the air, or my raw silk. But actually, you have to do more than that after a while. So verse 13, now we have purifying agents. A particular purifying agent is considered appropriate when its application removes the bad odor or dirty covering of some contaminated object and makes it resume its original nature. Purport. Furniture, kitchen utensils, clothing, and other objects are purified by application of abrasion, alkali, acid, water, and so on, when thereby removes the bad fragrance or impure coating of such objects, restoring them to their original clean appearance. So now we've heard about time, place, objects, agents, and now 14, the process, how to purify. The self can be cleansed by bathing, charity. So if you ever want to become clean, give in charity. Austerity, age, for sure. Personal strength, purificatory rituals, prescribed duties, and above all, by remembrance of me. So the most important is a purification is to think of Krishna. The Brahmana and other twice-born men should be duly purified before performing their specific activities. So now the purport again explains in detail what all this means. The word avastha indicates when boys and girls are young, they are kept pure by youthful innocence, and that as they grow up, they are kept pure through proper education and engagement. By one's individual potency, one should avoid sinful activities and the association of those inclined towards sense gratification. So that means personal strength. Avoid bad association and sinful activities. The word karma here refers to prescribed duties such as worshipping the spiritual master and deity, chanting Gayatri Mantra 3 times daily, and accepting spiritual initiation. Purificatory rituals. The prescribed duties of the Varnashram system automatically purify one from the covering of false ego by dovetailing one's bodily designation in appropriate religious activities. Specific duties for Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Brahmacharis, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi, as described previously in this canto by the Lord himself. The most significant word here is mat smritya, by remembrance of me. Ultimately, one cannot avoid the infection of illusion through any process except Krishna consciousness. So remembrance of me is actually the only way. The three modes of nature perpetually interact, and one must sometimes fall into the mode of ignorance and sometimes rise to the mode of goodness, uselessly rotating within the kingdom of illusion. But by Krishna consciousness, remembrance of the personality of Godhead, one can actually uproot one's tendency to act against the will of the absolute truth. Then one becomes free from the clutches of Maya and goes back home, back to Godhead, stated in Garuda Purana. Pavicha pavitra va sarvavastam gato biva yasmaret pundirikaksham sabahya vyantare shuchi. Whether one is pure or contaminated, regardless of one's external situation, simply by remembering the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, one can internally and externally cleanse one's existence. Lord Chaitanya recommended we constantly remember the Supreme Lord by chanting his holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This sublime process is essential for every human actually desirous of purifying his existence. So verse 15, a mantra is purified when chanted with proper knowledge. One's work is purified when offered to me. Thus, by purification of place, time, substance, doer, mantras, and work, one becomes religious. By negligence of these 6 items, one is considered irreligious. Purport. One receives a mantra from the mouth of a bona fide spiritual master who instructs the disciple in the method, meaning, and ultimate purpose of the mantra. The bona fide spiritual master in this age gives his disciple the Maha Mantra, holy names of God, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One who chants this mantra, considering himself to be eternal servant of the Lord, gradually learns to chant offenselessly, and by such purified chanting quickly achieves the highest perfection of life. The Lord here summarizes his discussion of purity and impurity, which manifests ultimately in religious and irreligious life. And what is the ultimate? Is to remember me, Krishna says. So any questions or comments on these verses? Yes. Yes, Gaurikishordas Babaji used to avoid bad association. He used to chant in the latrine. And somebody decided to, you know, when he left his body, somebody decided to go and chant in that latrine. And they were sitting there, and they heard the bricks chanting Hare Krishna. I read that somewhere. The bricks were chanting in that latrine by the influence of Gauri Kishore Das Babaji. So we shouldn't do it unless we can make the bricks chant Hare Krishna. We shouldn't imitate Gauri Kishore Das Babaji's austerities and his negligence of place in chanting the holy name. Gopal Guru pastime. Lord Chaitanya was trying to stop his tongue. I mean, he wanted to answer the call of nature, and then this small boy said, "Why are you doing that?" He says, "Because my tongue just wants to chant, but I'm doing such an impure thing." And the boy said, "No, there is no consideration of place and time." And so he says, "Yes, you are Gopal Guru." This little boy. Yes. That was how it affects our spiritual practices. Mm-hmm. Duty. What is the difference? Okay, let's look at the verse and see if we can figure that one out. That's what Satyaraj said. I didn't really say it. I was quoting him. And I think it's also in the purport of 9. Let's see. No, it isn't. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. Political, social, or economical, that's in the purport, disturbance that obstruct the execution of one's religious duties are considered inauspicious times. So these are examples of something that obstructs your duty. Now, here, verse 8. That is your practices. Like, you need to practice devotional service, you need a suitable environment. So that's different from time. So for your practice, you need a proper place. There can be an auspicious time. Yeah, that's true. Not much difference when you actually think about it. Yeah. Prescribed duty. So time is performance is prescribed duty. And place, it doesn't say there, yeah. Oh yeah, here it says, since sacrifice cannot be properly performed in areas bereft of such creatures, these places are impure. So practices like sacrifice, fruit of activities, then they cannot do them in these particular places. Different execution of different things. Of course, chanting Hare Krishna is transcendental, so we don't have to worry. We can do any place, any time. And so, yeah, that's interesting. Okay, any other question? Yes?
We have 30 million demigods, so this is
33. Yeah, Karmakanda, they're all worshipped. Also Upasanakanda. Upasanakanda, Karmakanda. Previously, like in Russia, right? Yeah. But the Shingadev, yeah, that's true.
So, is it a matter of your faith?
Is it a matter of your faith? Should the devotees have not been undercover in Russia?
No, not in mission.
Yeah, you have to, it's not just a matter of faith, it's the preaching mission. Like, if you go and do that, you'll just end up in the jail or in the mental institution. So, then, how would the preaching go on?
What I'm saying is,
yeah, Prabhupada did that. He preached directly. He got people. Of course, he didn't go out on the street and give a lecture and do Harinam. He did it privately. Prabhupada preached privately when he was in Russia. He called that boy to his two boys to his room, and he didn't like. Of course, he talked to the Professor Kotovsky also. He did go and tell Lidshuka. Serbia, after the war, okay.
Close.
Yeah, right.
Close
Muslim country, China.
Yes.
China also.
But
wow. They thought, wow, you people are really brave.
What's good or bad, difficult to say in
It's difficult to say, yeah. Well, yeah, so the devotees who live there, that's different. They have to be careful. Yeah, it's many places are dangerous now. So in China, you cannot, even neck beads you can't wear. I was talking to a devotee who preaches in China. They know about neck beads. You can't wear neck beads. You can't. And you know, they just go from, she was staying in one different apartment to another. The police would always come and raid. One time she was there when the police came. She was there. And they just told her, you know, okay, you can't stay here. You know, you have to stay in a hotel, you know, very expensive hotel. You're not allowed to stay with the people. It's like Russia before. Yeah, so these considerations devotees have to make. But I think Bhakti Tirthamraj, he would just go and preach in the universe. He would just go, you know. But he was in plain clothes, but still he would stand out, you know, because he was so different. He was fearless. He would just go and preach to the university professors and sell books to the universities. And somehow he never got caught. Yeah. Place and time. Yeah, there's a story Prabhupada tells, or somewhere I heard it. I think Prabhupada tells it. That there was one company, and there was... Hindus were working in this company. Then it was taken over by Muslims. I don't know if it's a company or if it was something. And then they said, okay, from tomorrow, nobody can wear... And they were all, you know, like a lot of Brahmins employed. From tomorrow, nobody can wear tilak or have beads or anything. And so everybody stopped wearing, except for two people. They came to work with their tilak. And then the man said, okay, you two can wear tilak to work. The rest can't. You guys can wear. Because you're the real devotees. Yeah, it's Prabhupada tells a story like that. Yeah, but you know, you have to see. I mean, you might be risking your life. So it's not, yeah. Any other questions or comments? Place, time, objects? Yes?
It's encouraging to know that a soiled mantra can be purified.
How can you purify it?
What
do they
say?
By knowledge.
By
knowing the meaning, yeah. It's okay, it's comforting to Adipurush to know that a soiled mantra can be purified.
Which mantra?
Dirty. Soiled. Unclean. Mm-hmm. What does it say here? Contaminated mantra? When chanted with proper knowledge. A mantra is purified when chanted with proper knowledge.
With proper knowledge or with the knowledge of the meaning of the word?
Well, in the purport it says meaning.
Meaning.
Somewhere. No, maybe not purport. Somewhere it says. You should know the meaning of mantra.
It says 15.
15, yeah? Yeah, it says that, yeah, meaning. Meaning of the mantra. Any other questions or comments? And tomorrow we will finish chapter 21. All these considerations of time, place, object, and everything. We'll hear more tomorrow. Oh. And Krishna is going to confuse us even more. But we're not confused because we follow the transcendental path. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.